Let's go. You're listening to KZSU, Stanford University's FM radio station, broadcasting across the Yay area on 90.1 and across the world at KZSU.org.
Welcome to Brands, Beats, and Bites, hosted by Daryl D.C. Cobbin and Larry Taman. Brands, Beats, and Bites stands at the intersection of brand, tech, and culture. We bring you interesting people and insightful points of view on what's popping and not popping in marketing, tech, culture, and beyond. DC and Larry are fascinated with the stories and people behind some of the best marketing in the business. No matter how dope your product, if your marketing sucks, your company may suck too. They both serve as managing partners at marketing consultancy Brand Positioning Doctors, where they help companies large and small, tech and non-tech, build better marketers so they can build great brands.
Brand nerds, back at you with another Brands, Beats, and Bites podcast. And it is said that your brand is only as good as your customer experience, or as bad as your customer experience. And sometimes we in the brand field, in the tech field, we forget this very simple fact. But today, LT, we have someone in the building who I am going to call a customer zealot. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna call him that. He is really all about the customer, and the customer can take many shapes and forms, including employees. So with that, LT, who do we have matriculating in the Brand Beats and Bites virtual building on this auspicious occasion?
Look at you with that Detroit Public School vocabulary. That sounds really good, D. I love that intro, the pre-intro.
Well, you know, I steal words from you and other people sometimes, Larry. Okay, I steal a few words here.
All right, D. So we have another CEO, a tech CEO in the house today with such a great background. So DC, we have Andy Alsop in the house today. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So we're so thrilled to have you. So D, check this out. Andy is that kid growing up who is always business savvy. He's the kid. He had the paper route. He starts a lawn mowing business. Mm-hmm. And you know, we know that kid. So really industrious, right? So he was that way from the get-go, right? So in the summer, he worked at a mail order catalog. And so for college, he goes to West Virginia University, like go Mountaineers, right? Where he earns a degree in business management. And after college, Andy jumps into tech, where he eventually runs a web development company called WebArt Publishing. And he eventually engineers a merger with WebArt Publishing and two other companies into a merge company called Panorama Point Corporation. Mm-hmm. And Andy eventually leads a successful exit when Panorama Point is bought by a search engine optimization company. So Andy's next gig is as a director of business assistance for Technology Ventures Corporation, TVC, where he consults with more than 30 tech startups on business direction, go-to-marketing strategies, and more. And his work with a team of entrepreneurs there leads to the formation of something called Packet Analytics Corporation, which is a network forensic search engine that allows security analysts in large network environments to search through terabytes of network data in real time. And Andy becomes the CEO. And that goes really well. And after a couple of other tech biz dev spots, Andy finds his way to become partner and leading biz dev of UC Charting Solutions, which is a startup that has a unique electronic health record solution called Promentum, which enables doctors to chart the patient visit faster than what they call the electronic health records, EHR for short, to any other EHR solution on an active stylus-based tablet. Now, I think that's key there. It's a tablet-based operation there. So at UC Charting Solutions, Andy leads biz dev, which includes partnerships, marketing, and key account sales. So Dee, as we all know, with the mosaic of all of our careers, the stepping stones tend to reveal themselves. And I could be wrong here, but from UC Charting Solutions working on a tablet-based EHR product, Andy then joins The Receptionist, which has been around just a couple of years. It's a burgeoning tech startup. And this
company, the name. Love that name.
It's great name, Andy. And this company is behind the original iPad-based visitor management system. For all, any of us who have done any visiting or, you know, meetings at different companies, we've interacted with this system. Mm-hmm. The receptionist, which is what it's the brand and product are called, offers an iPad-based visitor management solution that consistently receives a 5-star rating from its customers at well-known companies such as Yahoo, TripAdvisor, ADP, Home Finder, among many. They are now in over 4,500 locations in 36 countries and growing. So in summary, brand nerds, we have a super successful serial tech entrepreneur in the house today who is rethinking leadership strategy in a manner that should help all key constituents, including customers, shareholders, and employees, which we're really going to get into. So welcome to Brands, Beats, and Bites, Andy Alsop.
Well, thank you for having me. And as you go through that, man, there are so many things and so many memories that come up and so many lessons that come up. We've gone for hours about all that background, but thank you for having me. Great introduction.
Thank you.
As Larry often says, Andy, the introductions are only as good as the people whom they represent, and it all happens to be factual. So this is you, brother.
And Andy,
Larry does a phenomenal job every time, every time.
My job's easy.
Getting your flowers.
That's right. My job's easy because like you said, we have Andy in the house, so he's got such great stuff to talk about.
Truly does. Yeah.
And I just got to say that a lot of times those introductions are just 2 minutes of a little bit of fluff, but that was a great story. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Well done, LT. Well done. Andy, in our Get Comfy section, which is where we're going now, we will typically just have one area of Get Comfy. But for you, my brother, we're going to have two. And I'm going to pick up exactly where you were when Larry got done. You talked about the lessons and things that you've learned through all of the different experiences that you've been afforded. But there's one thing here in your background about the consultation that you have done with 30 or more tech startups and businesses. On their business direction. And so I'd like to know, for those that are listening now, the brand nerds that are listening, either those who are in tech or maybe not in tech, they're in brand or some other field, if you were giving them the top three pieces of advice from Andy's brain on what they need to be thinking about to either build a successful company or build a successful career, Andy would tell them what?
Well, let me just give you a little bit of background behind that, because in that was what TVC was called. Okay. And what I was doing was actually working up at Los Alamos National Laboratory, where there were scientists who had developed something, and the laboratories wanted to give them the opportunity to see if they could take that out into the marketplace. And a lot of times it's what they had created in the labs, and it was their technology transfer.
Okay.
So it's interesting because you're not talking to, you know, traditional entrepreneurs. These are scientists who think very scientifically. Mm. So I would say that we had to really start at like the brass tacks of what they were trying to do. And almost always what we had to do is to start talking about market, because a lot of the technologies were sort of something that was incredibly niche, highly scientific, very difficult to understand. It might require licensing agreements. It might require all of these things. So it always came down, in my opinion, to start out with, if we're going to talk about this, what is the market for it? Who's going to buy it? Who are you going to target with it? And then the next thing comes up, and this always came up, is team, who, you know, and good to great. I think the quote was, you want to start with who, not what.
Yep.
Right. It always had to be who. And I got to say, in a lot of these situations, these were scientists. They weren't people who really knew how to run a business.
Right.
That wasn't their first thing. So I found that really interesting and really exciting a lot of times to talk about that. Like, who are you going to get on the bus with you that's going to be able to get you to roll down the road? And then once you had that, then it came down to financing. Because now you got this market, maybe it's this massive market. Who are you going to get on the bus with you? And then how much money is it going to take to get this thing to the market? Because these weren't just like simple ideas like an iPad-based visitor management system you put in an office. These were like these you know, really intense things. What ended up coming out of that actually was that packet analytics, that one you read about, which was taking this forensic data that two guys were working on in the security lab, where they had to basically answer to the CIA, and the CIA was saying, like, has this server actually tried to attack the labs? And we were taking that out and saying, okay, how can we commercialize that? Boy, it was a tough one. So those are the three things focused on.
Sorry to interrupt. Can you just tell the brand nerds what CIA is an acronym for?
The Central Intelligence Agency.
Got it. Okay,
US, like the FBI. FBI was the other, Federal Bureau of Investigation. So yeah, the big agencies were coming to them and saying, we need to know some seriously important information. So
that's got big time security behind it too.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent. Exactly.
So I'm just going to repeat the three. First is always start with the market. And my understanding of what you were saying, and just correct me if I'm off here, is that you were trying to help these scientists understand the size of the prize. How big of an opportunity are they really talking about here? Is it niche or can it be scaled? And the second is the team, or who, start with the who, not the what, taken from Mr. Collins' great, good to great, fantastic, good to great book. So who are the folks that are gonna be on the squad? You've probably, Larry and I have talked about this, but you may not have heard this before, Andy. We have heard from VCs and private equity folks and angel investors a phrase of bet on the jockey, not the horse. So this goes to your point of who. And then finally, the financing. How are you going to get the bread, the skrill, or the dough in order to operate this thing? Okay, great. Good. Very good, brother. Very good. Now we're going to this. Larry, anything on that before we
just
go to the next
one? Just one quick thing. I love it because Richard White, just our previous guest, really almost earmarked eerily the same thing about the market being first, where a lot of tech folks go to the product first. And Richard did that earlier, right? And then you really have to look at the market first and then the team, just like Andy's talking about. So I love that.
Yeah. And if I could just like throw in real quick on that, one of the things, and that's something I've had to learn over my career as well, is you sort of get starry eyed about what this thing can do, and it's going to be amazing and it's going to be whatever. What I've found is product market fit has got to be the most important thing in a startup. And like, getting that first customer and making that first, actually leveraging that first customer into customer number 2, 3, 4, 5, that is the hardest thing, I feel like. And that's where actually I had a really tough time where I kind of, would get these companies started, but we couldn't get it to that next phase. Ooh. The thing that I did with the receptionist was, and I don't know if I'm jumping forward, is that I bought that company, and my predecessors had only just gotten it started, but they had already 100 or so locations using the software. I was able to actually talk to the customers and say, does this actually help you? And they said, yeah, this is like really helpful. I was walking out of those meetings realizing I don't have to go get customer number 1 through 100. They've already done that work. Right. I just need to build this. And that just opened up a whole land of opportunity for me. So.
Andy, you said you bought the company and then you went to go talk to their customers that you had acquired through buying the company. And you asked a question that I don't know how many CEOs will actually ask. It was a question that I believe represents humility. And that was, does this actually work?
Yeah.
I think most in your seat, they would presume
that's true.
Well, you're goddamn right it works because I just bought this shit. Okay. So it better be working. And you have the humility to ask that question and then have open ears to the answer. And then you are then gifted with something that says to you, I thought I had to go get 1, 2, 3 and up to 100, but now I see it's here. That's wonderful, Andy. That's wonderful.
And I just got to turn it right around a little bit because actually that's the question I asked before I bought it. I misspoke because I wanted to go talk to the customer and say, if I'm going to go and put my money down and buy this thing, I want to make sure it works. So I went, part of my due diligence was I went and interviewed customers, and then that's what they said, hey, it works. And then I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to buy this because if it works, now I just got to scale it.
I got it. Okay. Thank you. nevertheless, still a hell of a question.
Yep.
Yeah. Still a hell of a question. All right, we'll go to the next get comfy question. Hey, Larry, I think Andy may be the first of our entire slate of podcast guests, wonderful guests, that we've asked to get comfy questions.
I know, I love it though.
I think so. Okay. All right. Here we come to the second one. All right, Andy, I really love movies that make me think. I love movies that I can't quite anticipate what's going to happen next. And I try to really figure out, where is this movie going? I love those kind of movies. I hate movies where they're predictable, I can pick them out, and where they jump the shark. Those movies I don't like. I don't finish those movies. But one such movie and franchise for me, with the exception of one movie in the franchise, is the Bourne franchise. So this is Matt Damon, spy. I call him like
Jason
new
Bourne.
Spy. Yeah. So Jason Bourne. All right. And one of the movies in the franchise, which is my favorite, is called The Bourne Supremacy. So The Bourne Supremacy. And I love this movie because I thought, oh, he is really like showing the full repertoire of his skills and what he can do. Now, what I believe happened in that movie and the franchise is they did not treat Jason Bourne as a customer. They did not treat him as a customer. They treated him like a tool. We're going to point you in this direction and you're going to do this. Once he figured out how he was being leveraged, and Brand Nerds, if you've not seen any of the movies of the franchise, I highly recommend it. You'll understand where I'm going here.
The book's great too, by the way.
What's that now?
The book that it's based off is great too.
Oh, the book. I haven't read the book, but the thank you, Larry. Just the movies. But so anyway, once he figured out what he was being used for as a tool and decided, no, I've got some thoughts about what I want to do. He rained down holy hell on the agencies, one of them being a faux CIA or a faux FBI. The point here is that Jason Bourne became supreme. And that's why I love that movie, that particular movie, The Bourne Supremacy. You've got something you call the employee supremacy. And so just in the name alone, I'm thinking, what's that? Do tell, Andy.
Oh, man. And there's an intentionality behind it. But I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story. This comes from, if you follow Simon Sinek at all, I don't know if you do, but it's he wrote the book, The Infinite Game. And in Infinite Game, he talks about a just cause. And our just cause is specifically, I'll tell you this, this is what our company has come to. This was a soul searching effort. This was all of our leadership team coming together, disclosing what their own personal whys were, where they were going, was to build a world where a company's profits fueled a mission to be in service to its employees and the community.
Ooh.
Now, we adopted that. And I'll repeat it again, because sometimes you hear the words and you don't hear it. But to build a world, right? To build a world where a company's profits fuel the mission to be in service to its employees and the community. So what we want to do is we want to build a world. And it's not build a world where everybody's using a visitor management system. It's really build a world about, really bringing what the company does to the employees and the community. So then shortly after this, we came up with that in the second quarter of last year. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking to myself, because I've listened to this Inc.com interview where Simon Sinek is talking about the fact that there's shareholder supremacy. And shareholder supremacy basically says that every decision that the leaders of a company make have to be in the benefit of the shareholders, right? So that's what they have to do. And that's what we've all grown up with. And it came from basically Milton Friedman's doctrine in the 70s of like, this is what the way a company needs to be run. It has so many ill effects, so many negative and unintended consequences that have caused pain in the lives of employees. And so what I was actually walking along, taking a hike one day, and I'm sitting there going, employee supremacy. Employee supremacy is where a company's leaders, the leadership team, the CEO, the managers, are all their decision-making is not focused on what's best for the shareholders, but it's actually what's best for the employees and the community that surrounds the company. The community around a company is very important as well. It's all your contractors, it's the environment you live in, and your employees. So it means that instead of taking the perspective that everything you do and the company does is for the shareholders, you're actually saying it's for the employees and the community. And when you take that perspective, it is a shift in perception and a shift in thinking, where every decision you're making is now impacted by that. Now let's take that forward and say that you actually make those decisions for the employees. Your employees, and this is something that Simon Sinek talks about, is you have to have trusting teams in a company.
Right.
You know, you run a shareholder supremacy and you're doing everything for the shareholders. What you're ending up doing is making decisions that make them want to, you know, fake and lie and hide, because they're not being treated like trusted individuals that are there to, that you should be honoring the fact that your employees are doing something for you, not that they're just robots that are going to just do the work necessary so that the shareholders can benefit. So you see these amazing things that change all of a sudden, where in our company and the other companies that are starting to do this as well, you're starting to see decisions being made at the employee level, at the manager level, at the leadership level, where I, as the CEO, don't have to be sitting there saying, everybody needs to do it because I'm scared that they're not going to be doing the things that are necessary to benefit the shareholders. They're benefiting each other. They're doing things where they're creating trusting teams among themselves. And then they're actually creating trusting relationships with their customers, because they're not being told, go and sell that customer because we need to get that next deal. They're actually selling the customer because they're bringing them something that they believe can actually help them and improve their lives. So that's what employee supremacy about is all about.
Oof, this is so deep, Dee. And
heavy.
And Andy, you did a great job explaining it. So you mentioned second quarter last year is where, I love this, you're on a hike. And for those brand nerds out there, Andy, you're in Denver, right? In the Denver area?
That's the funny story is I'm actually live in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, Santa Fe, okay.
But, yeah, but the company is based in Denver. I bought it from a Boulder-based startup, so okay. I go back and forth.
You go back and forth. Well, either one of those places, if you've had the good fortune of being, there's great hiking in both those places. So you're on this hike.
Very true.
And this is really almost like a lightning bolt to you that we've got to shift consciousness here. So can you talk to us about how you then communicated that at the receptionist and how that has been imbued at the receptionist? And if you can talk about what the reception, pardon the pun, has been within the company, and if in fact it has also, or if it's too early to see results from it.
So starting off with how we introduced it, first we came up with our just cause, and then we introduced what our just cause was to the company. And it was incredibly well received, because what happens is people come into a company like this with job trauma. And we have heard, and we've created a safe space for our employees to talk about their job trauma, for them to be able to disclose what it's like. You know, one person has said that, you know, he was, actually, I'll just say it's our director of sales. He was told by the owner of the company he was working for before, I need to go buy a $2 million home. I don't have enough money. I need you to sell more, right? And so he was put under this intense pressure to go to the sales team.
Hold on, Andy.
Yeah.
Hold on, Andy. This is what the former owner and CEO of the company actually said to an employee?
This is what, yeah, in another company. Not
no, we get that.
Owner.
We get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Another company.
That is exactly right. What was said. Was I sat him down and said, I need to buy this home. I don't have enough money. I need you to sell more.
Oh my God. And that's supposed to get him juiced up to go sell more, right? Oh
my God. Yeah, is that shareholder supremacy? He's the shareholder of the company, right? Right. He's saying, I am the one who benefits here. Now, what do you think that experience was for the other salespeople on the team? As my poor, he's one of the most loving people in the world, has to go to the team and say, we have to sell harder. You got to work harder because we've got to do this. It's just, that's like one of a zillion stories I've heard about job trauma. Right. And so when we bring this up, some people are a little bit like, are you serious? Are you really serious? You know, about like, is this actually what you're saying? And then they're a little bit like, prove it, right? And we've been proving it all along, because I've had this I've long history, you've heard about it. I've always been very centric about employees. But the problem has been, I've also had the influence of two incredibly successful brothers. And it's always been about shareholder supremacy, and that's where you got to make your decision. So I've always lived in conflict until I got to this point where I said, I don't have to feel the pressure of shareholder supremacy any longer, because I'm declaring to the world I'm not doing it anymore. So I'm doing employee supremacy. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about impacts. Let's say, for instance, during the pandemic, we had employees, young employees at the company who had left their families to move to Denver so that they could either work for our company or they had transitioned into our job. Well, they didn't have a connection back during the pandemic because they couldn't get on an airplane. Right. So we started the COVID Family Travel Fund, which you want to go back here to be at your family. We're going to pay for the hotel rooms. We're going to pay for a rental car. We're going to pay for your gas if you take your own car. And then go work at your home so you can be with your family, so you can feel that sense of bond and connection. During the pandemic, we were going through our benefits review. You know, you do this annually with your benefits to determine. And we're talking to we work with what's called a professional employer organization or a PEO, and we're going through our benefits review. And they're like, well, what should we do in terms of our benefits? And I said, well, I want to increase our benefits. And they're like, wait, it's COVID. I've never heard a customer saying that they want to increase their benefits. We're like, yeah, we're going to actually take our employee premiums from 90%, where the company pays 90% of the premiums, to 100%. And then we're going to increase the family benefit from 50 to 60. And it's not huge, but you know, that was enough people like, wow, you're actually increasing our benefits. We introduced another one, which was the vacation fund, because we have an unlimited vacation policy. But you get employees saying, but I don't have enough money to be able to pay for a vacation. Now we give all of our employees $1,500 a year so that they can pay for vacation. We have one that just came back from 2 weeks of vacation in Europe, and she paid for all of her plane tickets and a bunch of her hotels so she could travel and get that time away that she needed. So those are some of the impacts. And then it goes to the impacts of the employees, I mean, to the customers. I don't have to tell our employees, this is how you talk to your customers. They go out and they know the company trusts them. They know their employees, other employees trust them as well. And they go out there and they come back and say, I did this thing for the customer. Hope it was okay. And it's something like the customer will just walk away like, you did? That's incredible. So I don't know. That's just like the impacts that come from it.
Wow. I'm blown away by this, D.
So am I. I have a question though, Larry, but did you have anything to ask?
You asked yours first.
All right, so I'll do mine, you do yours, and then we'll go to the next section.
Yep.
Andy, there's a saying that one of my old bosses shared with me, and it was, what problem, an unintended, possibly unanticipated problem, might this wonderful solution of yours beget? So he used to say this to me from time to time. So let's go to Milton Friedman's original 70s view of shareholders, and then Simon Sinek's more current day version of it, shareholder supremacy. I'm certain that when Milton thought about shareholders being at the top of the totem pole, he thought this is a very good thing. And obviously quite a few other people agreed, because we took that on. And it's only later that we begin to see what that prism on the world means for employees. But that wasn't seen at first. At first, it was like, oh, this is great. So you are now in the world of employee supremacy. And it all sounds good, Andy. It sounds good. But my question to you, my brother, is what unintended or possibly unanticipated problems might this wonderful solution called employee supremacy beget?
Great question.
Yep.
That is a great question. Because I've seen so many benefits from it and have been overwhelmed by the benefits of it, in contrast to shareholder supremacy.
Yep.
That I'm sitting here kind of racking my brain, and I don't want it to be all like roses and I'm trying to figure out like we definitely have had the, I guess maybe the unintended, I don't know if it's even an unintended consequence, but the only thing I can really think is there's a shift in thinking that comes from it, and you have to be able to overcome that. And a lot of times it comes from the employees, and it comes from incoming employees. They will frequently, we now are sought out as a company to go work for because of this, right?
Yeah.
And we're in a day and age where it's not easy to get employees.
That's right.
So we are, and we do not just take the first employee. So we just hired a director of customer experience. It took us 3 months and 700 applications before we finally got, you know, to the one person who we brought in. In almost every case during the interview, the employees or the candidates are saying, I've read about this. I've seen this. I don't believe it. And they're asking the other employees during interviews, you know, what do you think? And then, so the employees say, look, I've actually had several employees in interviews say, this company has changed my life. And so when they actually come in as a candidate, and now they're an employee, they're sitting there going, when is the other shoe going to drop? And so it just takes a while. And I don't know if that specifically answers your question, but it takes a while for them to be like, okay, I can trust this. This is actually happening. This is the way it's going to be.
Wow.
And the more employees you have coming in, and the more people are saying this, the shorter time frame, you know, the time frame for people to accept that. But, you know, I've found nothing but like, oh man, I just lived in so much conflict before when I was running my company, because I was like, I want to do what's best for the employees, but I got to do what's best for the shareholders. And they, in many cases, are in complete conflict.
Right.
And then you I can't, honestly, was not sleeping well at night. Right. Because I could not figure out how to resolve the conflict. This doesn't feel right to do this to this employee, but I have to. This is shareholder supremacy. This is, I have to do what's in the best interest. And it's like, I don't have that anymore. I live a much more peaceful entrepreneurial life as a result.
And this is just an example. And then I'm just going to give it to you. I don't want you to delve into it. I just want to place it in front of you, let it cogitate. And then we're going to go to Larry because Larry wants to say something. Then we're going to go to the next section, but we'll come back to it. But I'll give you an example. When a person is driving a Ford Fiesta, but they, no disrespect to Ford Fiestas. Okay, no disrespect.
That means you're going to disrespect Ford Fiesta.
That means they're going to disrespect you. And then they end up getting, call it a Lexus. They no longer think very highly of the Ford Fiesta because they're in the Lexus. And then when they're in the Lexus, they kind of look around and, oh, there's a Bentley. Oh, maybe I get a Bentley. And then the person gets the Bentley, they're not thinking that highly of the Lexus. This is the way the human species is wired. So let me give you an example based on that principle. Wow, Andy, this company is great. I was able to go to Europe to travel and pay for flights and hotel rooms with this $1,500, I'm gonna call it a stipend. You all may call it something much better than that, $1,500 stipend. But you know, that was just me, and I was 30 at the time, and now I'm 42, and I have a family. And if we're really about employee supremacy, and we know families, that $1,500 is not gonna go very far with a family there, Andy. So we think the new stipend should be $5,000. What I'm saying here, Andy, is that at some point, will this notion of employee supremacy become intoxicating to employees such that what they want at some point becomes counter to what is feasible to run a responsible P&L and balance sheet? So that's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to lay that at your feet. Let you just cogitate on that. No need to comment now, but Larry?
Well, it's all a perfect segue for my question. Because with this whole new way of thinking, has this, and you mentioned the director of customer experience, it took you a long time to find this person. Has this impacted the way you recruit and who you're actually looking for to get on the bus. Because let's face it, there are certain people in life that just want to be told what to do, and they're not comfortable with thinking for themselves. So you guys are going to have huge appeal to a lot of folks, but others, they're not necessarily going to thrive in your environment. So understanding who are the right people to get on the bus is really important, I would imagine.
True. It is absolutely critical that you get the right people on the bus. So the way we do that, we also run, before we discovered the infinite game, we discovered Traction by Gino Wickman, the entrepreneurial operating system and all that. And what Traction tells you to do is to start with your core values. And in terms of your, if you want to build your company and you want to build what they call the Virtual Traction Organizer, the VTO, which is a 2-page document outlining exactly what you're doing, like what you're doing at your company, what your niche is, whatever else. And it starts with your core values. Our core values are Fabric, which are fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative.
Ooh. Okay. Run that down again, Andy.
So that's Fabric, and it's fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative. Mm. And we live it. We seriously live it. We don't just put them on the walls and then, you know, 6 months later say, what are our core values? We actually have Fabric nominations. Somebody just on the team won the Fabric nomination for April for bold. We were doing bold, and that was just announced to the team and stuff. Mm. Well, why I bring that up is that we actually are hiring. We work with this awesome organization called Scalability Solutions, run by this wonderful woman, Lina Blauner. And she does all of our recruiting from the point at which we scope a job all the way to the point where they've been hired and onboarded. And she helps us with all that. As part of her process, she does a filtration, and we actually put Fabric in, and we have one question. What is your favorite value in Fabric? It requires them to go find the values, and it requires them to just write a little bit about it.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, 50% of people will come up and they'll talk about, my favorite value is a family values or something. And they didn't even like go look at it. Those people are automatically, weeded out of the process. We know that at least they've come up and they said, so somebody who will come, and if anybody who's listening to this podcast will get a little tip. If you said, okay, my favorite value is authentic, and you say, and the other question is why, they say, well, authenticity is really important, because if authenticity doesn't come up in the workplace, it means that you're not sure if you can really trust what's going on. And then we're like, okay, there's somebody who actually holds one of our values really strongly. So this is how we make sure that we get people on the bus. Is first they've got to believe in our core values. So we've got to believe they're a good cultural fit. And then we can start looking at like, what was their background and what's their everything else. So what we have now is a group of people who really do share our core values. And what you said is so true. People just want to get like the job done. So you can't be in an environment where it's like, it's, you know, the Wild West, whatever happens, man, do whatever you want, right? You still have to create structure. You still have to have processes. You still have to have procedures. You still have to say, this is the way we do things. But they get an opportunity to have an impact on that. If they feel like, you know, what about if we did it this way? If they're innovative and they come up with an innovative idea, that is heard and listened to. And that's what's really important. They are not treated as these robots that are to be told exactly what to say upon a script to a customer. They're actually said, this is the way we talk to our customers. This is what we do. This is how we do it. We have an incredibly extensive onboarding process, so they understand that. But if they say, man, I don't really like how we're doing this. I've had five conversations in a row where that didn't land with a customer. Could we do it? Yeah, let's listen to it. Let's figure out how to do it better. Because they feel trusted. They feel like they can bring it up. Mm-hmm. So that ends up, you know, and I don't know. So DC, I gotta just like, you know, I have some thoughts about what you brought up. And like what you just said was amazing in terms of like, man, I've got a family. Like, what's $1,500 going to do?
Yeah.
We actually, yeah. We have a lot of families in the company. We don't have, we have everything. I'm the oldest guy. I'm the old guy in the company. I am the oldest guy, but we do have, you know, families of, you know, two and three. And for them, they say, you know, yeah, I have a family and it's going to take me some, you know, some money to get across if I'm going to go to Europe or take a trip. But they look at this. It's so funny. They look at this vacation. We call it a vacation fund. We were calling it a stipend. I didn't like that word. But we looked at that vacation fund, and they look at that vacation fund as this little rice bowl that they have. Like, maybe it's not going to pay for their whole vacation, but it's this thing that can help them. You know?
Ah, got it.
It's this fund. It's like this thing that is theirs. And you have to work for the company for a year before you get it. So like the first year is get it. And they're like, they've got stars in their eyes. Like already, you know, our accounts receivable specialist just passed his 1 year anniversary. He's like, what about if I went to, you know, Mexico? I hope he doesn't mind. I don't think he'd mind. He's a fantastic individual. It's like, I'm going to go, you know, like maybe live for a week or two in Mexico. And then I'm going to take like a week off, because we say you can't use your vacation fund to go work somewhere else, right? We want you to use your vacation fund to explore things, to go out, to like go vacation. Your computer's off, no Slack notifications, nothing, right? You can't, we've actually had some of them like, oh, I'm going to work a little bit. No, if you're going to work, you can't use the vacation fund. We've been very strict about it.
Love that incentive.
Awesome.
Yeah, because that's what it's about. It's about detaching, you know? Right. And you know, the woman who went to Europe, she hadn't taken a vacation in a while, and then she worked so damn hard. She was refreshed when she got back. In fact, I'm going to be talking to her later this afternoon. So anyhow, I mean, that's where it comes in.
Tell her we talked about her on the podcast.
I will.
Tell her we talked about her on the podcast. All right. So Andy, we're going to have to get to the next section now, brother. But any final comments before we make this transition?
Now let's make the transition. Let's do it.
Here we go. That was fantastic. We're in the five questions now, Andy. Five questions. I ask one, Larry asks one. We go back and forth until we reach the magic number of five. I get to lead off. And I'm really curious about your answer here, given the resonance that you have around humanity. So what was your first branding experience that swept you off your feet, that captivated your attention, that you loved, like you may have loved the first crush?
So this one, and I hope it doesn't sound too trite, but so my mom got me, I had a Commodore 64, and I'm not a coder guy, right? Yeah. I am definitely a business guy, but I consider myself a highly technical business guy.
Okay.
So first what I got was the Timex Sinclair, then I got the Commodore 64, and then I got the Apple IIe. My mom bought that for me for like Christmas or something.
Wow.
Hilarious story. I don't know if you know about the Apple IIe, but they actually had instructions that not everything settled correctly when they shipped it. So they actually told you to take it out of the box and drop it once on the desk to get it to settle. And so
nice.
And so I had that. It's all line commands and everything else. And then they came out with the first Macintosh. And I was like, I sat for hours in front of that Macintosh. Mm. And that little Apple, you know, a little Apple with the colored stripes through it and everything else. That was the one that I would dream about it. I would think about it. Wow. I was like, this is amazing.
What was it about this device that captivated you?
Well, I had done everything that I had done so far, whether it was on the Commodore or whether it was the Apple IIe. For me, it was the fact that there was the graphical user interface. The fact that you could like drag things around, move them, click them, bring them up. All of that captivated like my imagination for where things could go.
Beautiful. Beautiful, brother. LT?
No, love that. Let's go to the next question.
All right, let's do it.
So Andy, who has had or is having the most influence on your career?
Let's see. This is one I've thought a lot about. So I'd say it's my two brothers. So I have four brothers and a sister. So I'm the youngest of six. So I'm
Can you give all the shout out, please? Give them all a shout out.
Yeah. All of them. Yeah. Well, all of them have been influential in my life. And, you know, and actually going back to my dad, sadly, my dad passed when I was seven, but he was a well-known journalist. And, you know, I just remember growing up with all these like people in our house and stuff with all these names. I was like starry-eyed, not knowing about who they were and stuff. But my oldest brother, Joe, is founded a company called Progress Software. And he founded it he started in a dentist office in Billerica, Massachusetts. And oh, wow. I just remember going into that office and they had IBMs everywhere. It was basically a database company. And he got, you know, he grew it from the point where I remember being in this dentist office where there are five people to the point where I visited him in his corporate offices. And there were, you know, he had 2,000 employees publicly traded on the NASDAQ. Wow. It took $10 million from New Enterprise Associates, a big fund. And at that time, this is before all of these, you know, $100 million and $500 million fundings, you know, you get 10 or 15 million and you'd make it work on that. And he made that into, you know, when he left $3.2 billion market cap or something like that. So that just like being there, that was like visceral for me to be in the dentist's office and things like that. And the other one is my brother, Stuart Alsop, who is he's a well-known venture capitalist in San Francisco. And just seeing all the companies he worked with. In fact, he funded, talking about Richard White, he funded Justin TV that Richard was talking about in our podcast.
Oh, wow.
He was doing life casting, you know, where they were strapping a computer to the back and putting a camera. And he did that. And that ended up, you know, he followed that all the way through Twitch. And so both of these people were really influential individuals on my life and very entrepreneurial. Every one of my siblings, we don't work for anybody. We're all like working for ourselves. So like, that's what ended up happening. So when I say that those are the two people, is Joe and Stuart are the two people that have had the biggest impact. And I'll just tell you this one story with this company. When I bought it, and Stuart and Joe both invested a little bit of money in it to help me kind of get it going. But Stuart looked at me and said, I don't think you need to get boatloads of venture capital for this company. I think that you can run this off of cash flow. And that was that released me from the chains of feeling like I had to go the VC route. Because I'd already gotten VC in previous, and I was like, I don't want to do that again.
Right.
And so we're bootstrapped, and we're probably the only bootstrapped in the iPad-based visitor management, you know, industry. But having that influence was really like, yeah, Andy, you know, you kind of, you almost have permission to go without having to take venture capital. This venture capitalist telling me this too.
I was just going to say, who would know better than Stuart and Joe from side? Do you want to take the next question?
I do. Given that you are a serial entrepreneur and you've had many different experiences, many different companies that you've either worked at or for and or founded, you've had some successes, but there's no doubt you've had some failures. And we'd like you to share what you consider to be the singular biggest F up and what you've learned from it.
This is funny. I think every one of your guests probably says the same thing. There's a lot of them. So you got to come up with one, right?
Yes.
Yep. So as you, in your introduction, you talked about the fact that lawn mowing business and, you know, paper route and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I got into college at West Virginia University. And I decided with my buddy to start a restaurant, actually start a bar, you know, we're in college, okay. Want to start a bar or whatever, right?
Okay.
And I had received this small inheritance when my uncle died. And I'm like, okay. I'm taking it and we're going to turn it into a bar. And then after that went along and was a difficult experience and ended up having to get out of that. I then said, I'm going to make this into a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so I ran that for 2.5 years. And the lesson was, and the biggest F up was, I lost all the money. Mm. I went into it thinking that I've eaten in restaurants. I've never worked in one before. I know how. I've never been a bartender, but I've gone to bars before. So I know how to, it's just mixing drinks and making food. That's all there is to a restaurant.
What can be hard about this? And,
exactly. And it was, oh man, that took years off my life. It was a good learning experience. I actually dropped out of college to do it and went back. But it was the biggest F up because I came out of that with no money. And I went into it thinking, I don't need any experience. I can figure it out. And I learned the secret of experience, or not the secret, but how important having experience is.
Well, Andy, that sounds a lot like marketing. Like, because we are consumers, we think we know how to do new marketing. Very exactly. Similar. Larry, next question, brother.
Okay, that I love that story. So, okay, Andy, next question is, and you're perfect for this, regarding technology and marketing, you have a great perspective because of your many different views. Can you tell us where you think marketers should lean in or best leverage tech versus areas that they should be leery?
I think this comes down to really asking the question of what's the value you're going to receive from the technology? What is the cost of implementing the technology? Because I think that a lot of times we have a tendency to say, hey, that's the latest technology, I've got to implement it. And how is that actually going to benefit what I'm trying to work on, what I'm trying to achieve? And I think way too many times people jump quickly to implement technology. It costs them a bunch of money. Time is your most valuable asset, and it can take an inordinate amount of time. So that's what I would say. That's how I think the thought process needs to be. There's so many technology solutions out there for marketers as well, you know, and it's just depending, like, where are you going to get it? And you can't do it all. That's the other thing I've noticed, is everybody tries. And that's something we constantly are doing, is like making a list of all the things we're doing, because that list always gets longer. And then you're saying to yourself, why is it we're doing all these things? And you need to reduce the list down again and say, like, we've got to cut out these things that aren't working.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Dee, anything to add?
No, well, actually, just very briefly, we all get the same number of hours and minutes and seconds in the day. We don't all, unfortunately, have the same level of skill in how to make the most of them. And so what Andy is pointing to is, how do we use technology to allow us to make the most of the time that we have? Mm-hmm. So I love that. All right, final question on the five, Brother Andy. What are you most proud of?
Well, a lot of times I know I've heard this before. Well, I'm gonna just put it this way. Somebody was asking Sir Richard Branson in an interview, like, what is it, you know, like, what are you most proud of, and how is it you became so successful? And he said, don't look at me and what I've done and, you know, what I've done in business and anything. He said, success comes from my children and being able to put out good people out into the world who are going to make an impact and help. So I am most successful. I've got three kids. I'm very proud of them. You can't predict the way they're going to go, but, you know, we've tried really hard to make them into good people. And I hope that they will be the thing that I'm most proud of at the end of my days, I guess.
That's awesome. Can you shout out the names, please?
Oh, yeah. All right. We got Alex in LA. We got Sydney in New York at NYU. Mm. We have Colin, who is going to be going off to Puget Sound, the University of Puget Sound in the fall.
Puget Sound.
Awesome. You know what's funny? Andy, our son Jake goes to Pacific University in Forest Grove. And he had gotten into University of Puget Sound too. That's a school. Look, that's a beautiful, great place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tough, man. This is, I really feel for him and all my kids, because that's the first really big decision you have to make.
Yep.
Is what school you go to and what you apply to. And that was a lot of, you know, to determine whether he was deciding between Utah and Puget Sound, and he chose Puget Sound. And I'm really proud of him, because it was a hard decision. He thought about it. He kind of just finally laid it down and said, this is what I'm going to do.
That's kid supremacy, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's good. I don't vote. All right, Larry.
We ready to move to the next section, D?
Let's do it.
What is popping, D? What's popping?
What's popping?
So Andy, this is our chance to shout out, shout down, or simply air something happening in and around marketing today that we think is good fodder for discussion. So D, you want to go first or shall I?
Let me go first, brother. And I'm going to connect it to a recent trip. I returned on Monday from Tampa, Florida. And Andy, Larry knows this. I was staying at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel, Tampa, Florida. Don't know if you've ever stayed at this hotel, but it is a casino and a hotel. And I don't typically stay in hotels that have a casino connected to them unless I'm in Vegas. But in this case, I happen to be in a casino hotel. We were celebrating the birthday of a very good friend of our of mine, and we did a cabana. So we had a cabana, there were about eight of us, Andy. And so I've not spent that much time in a Hard Rock hotel. So I was thinking music because of Hard Rock Hotel. So as I'm walking through the hotel, I see Elvis's piano, it's like $1 million piano, so I'm told. I see different costumes or outfits by famous people, Lady Gaga, Sir John McCartney, Beyonce, et cetera. So all of that was on brand for me. The ropes where you would go to check in, instead of just pose, it had guitars. Everything was on brand. Loved all of that. So now I'm thinking about the service. Like what kind of service happens in this place? So we're at the cabana. And there's a young man by the name of Brandon who is looking after us at the cabana. This young man's smile was wattage and lit up a room. And there are eight of us, and we know we are not the only cabana that he is handling. We've got this brother running, Andy and Larry. He is going to get this and that and coming back and forth. And at no point does he give any indication that any of this bothers him. He is happy, and we feel his joy. And one of the folks that were part of our party, Andy and Larry, commented on his smile. And after the experience, we had such a good time that I talked with his manager. And I do this when in only two occasions, and I say it like this. I say, I have been blessed. I have traveled the world. And I only say something and ask for a manager in one of two occasions. Either the service was exceptionally good or exceptionally bad. And typically when you talk to a manager, they think it's the latter. Right. And I say, this is exceptionally good. And I say, this is what I look for. This is what brings me joy in an experience like this. Number one, is the person knowledgeable? Are they knowledgeable about the menu? Are they knowledgeable about what's going on around me that they can share that knowledge with me? Are they knowledgeable about the wine or the cigars? That's one. Number two, are they expedient? To your earlier point, Andy, do they treat my time with preciousness? Are they there when we need them and not there when we don't need them? Are they quick to help us get what we need, but not too quick? So expedient with time. And the third is a welcoming disposition. Do they make me and my guests feel like they're happy to be there and they're happy we are there? Or conversely, do they treat us as if we would rather be anywhere in the world right now than in front of you taking whatever your order happens to be? So I said, when I find these three things, these elevate my experience. And I just said, I want to acknowledge Brandon for doing such and for you as a manager for creating this. So of course, managers are shocked by this most of the time. The point is that I now have a higher view of the Hard Rock Cafe, Hard Rock Hotel brand, because Brandon elevated the experience as an employee who shone a light on my experience and the experience of others. So that's what's popping for me.
So Andy, you have a reaction?
Well, I think that's a great story, and it was reminding me. So I just went out. I go to this place right near here, right near me in Santa Fe, called Del Charro. And it's just, it's like this corner place. It's been there forever. It's actually a restaurant that's part of the hotel and stuff. And I'm sitting there and I'm having a margarita and some wings. They have the best wings in town. Ooh, and nice. I'm sitting there with Chris. Yeah. And they are good too. They have a chipotle sauce on us. You know, you're not standard wings. So I'm there with Chris, the bartender, and this guy is moving, shaking. I mean, he has to cover the whole restaurant and all the drinks and everything. He's got two ends of the bar. He's doing the whole thing, but he knows at every instant what I need, when it's coming. I was like, I need to get a to-go order for my wife. He comes over to me at the perfect time and says, okay, let's order it now because you'll have it right. Because I'm watching the Golden State game, in fact. He orders it. Burger comes right as time expires. Just like, wow. It was like a great experience. And so I think what you're saying is exactly, you know, and that comes down to everything. And that's why I want our customers to have that experience as well. Because I want them to go away and tell people, I had this great experience because they took care of me. But I love that story. That's a great story.
Well, thank you, Andy. I'm struck. You guys both told great stories, right? And what happens is the face of the brands become truly your personal experience, right?
Yes.
Your personal interaction are the face of those brands. In your case, Andy, with your local establishment, which is awesome because that incredible bartender, indeed, not only has the brand that elevated the brand for you, but because I know you, I think of Hard Rock in an incredibly different way. And all of our brand nerds are going to be thinking of it differently.
Great point.
Right?
Great point, Larry.
The exponential nature of that. And that's where you go, the risk reward of having a Brandon or having somebody who quite frankly sucks, you know, you can't literally and figuratively can't afford to have the non-Brandon. You need to have Brandons. And by the way, to go to full circle, you need to make sure that the Brandons of the world are treated with employee supremacy, right?
Yes.
Even if you don't do that, it sort of corporate wide, you better treat your best people that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's true.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a, it is
that
personal experience is that is your brand. I mean, I'm sure we all have stories of the companies we've dealt with, which we don't want to mention their name or whatever. And it's always. Yeah, exactly. Mine's American Airlines. I'll throw that out. Mine's American Airlines.
American Airlines. Okay. So this is a good segue, actually, in many ways to my what's popping. So my what's popping is Andy, quite honestly, Brandner, is full transparency. We always have a pre-show meeting with our guest, and Andy was enlightening us with the concept of employee supremacy. And it really got me to thinking about my what's popping. And I thought about, there's a great corollary to sports. And as the brand nerds know, Andy, we use sports examples a lot because DC and I are not only sports fans, but have been embedded professionally with a lot of things vis-a-vis sports. So if you think about the most successful teams, they actually practice employee supremacy. So I'm going to use my wonderful Golden State Warriors. They practice employee supremacy all the time. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, for better or for worse, they're the ones that are the face of the Warriors, and they are treated by Joe Lacob as they should be, supremely. So I've got a really recent example of not practicing employee supremacy in sports. And there, I'm going to use a local example again, our San Francisco 49ers with Deebo Samuel. Now, I'm a big Niners fan, and this situation really bums me out. For those who aren't sports fans, just a quick backstory. Deebo is one of the best young wide receivers in the NFL. And the Niners' innovative head coach, Kyle Shanahan, last season also started using Deebo as what they called a wide back, which is half wide receiver and half running back. The problem is running backs get beat up more than receivers and make less money than receivers in the 2022 version of the NFL. So if Deebo continues to play as a wide back, his career length will invariably be shorter. So Deebo's contract is up the end of next season, end of the 2022 season. And the way the NFL rules stipulate, he can have a contract extension now. So all good players have these talks. So the Niners, under Jed York's ownership, if they were practicing employee supremacy, they would pay Deebo like he's one of the best receivers in the NFL, and actually even more because he's playing this dual position, which is almost like two guys in one, right?
Yeah.
So guess what they've done? They've taken a hardball negotiation stance with him. And about a few weeks ago here, we're sitting in early May, Deebo said, I want to be traded. He's asked to be traded. And it was huge news in the NFL because he's one of the best young wideouts in the league.
So my point is highly unlikely previous great owners who've talked about here all the time, such as Eddie DeBartolo, who used to run the Niners, he practiced employee supremacy way back in the day. And by the way, he had five rings to show for it. He never let this happen. And I would also suggest that the Warriors, who have someone who I think is very similar, Jordan Poole is his burgeoning young star. Jordan's going to be up for an extension this summer. I guarantee you, you won't hear Jordan asking for a trade. So I just wanted to put that out there to you guys. What do you think about what I've talked about?
Andy?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of examples of that as well. I mean, the Rooney family over in Pittsburgh is another one. You know, I think they are. Now, I came from Washington, D.C. Dan Snyder.
God bless. He's
running shareholder supremacy all day long.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
It is. And I see the decisions. And look at the set. Yeah. Look at the success, you know?
Yeah.
And so I that makes a ton of sense. And you see, and interesting, because what you're saying is you can correlate essentially employee supremacy. If you run your team that way, you're going to have success.
Yep.
If you run under shareholder supremacy, it's all going to be about the dollars, the franchise money you can get, the portion of all of the apparel sales and other stuff. And that's what you're thinking about. And that's where your team's going to go too. It's not going to actually be successful. Love it.
Great example, Larry. I'll quickly say this. Once Shanahan, that's the coach out in San Francisco. I think it's Kyle Shanahan. Is that the gentleman's name?
That's correct.
Yeah. Once Kyle Shanahan, who fancies himself and others, I think would agree that he's an offensive design genius.
Yep.
Once he designed a way to leverage Debo's skills, they were quite proud of themselves. And to your point about shareholder supremacy, when they saw the wins coming in and their record increasing, they thought, we're going to keep leveraging this kid right here because it's resulting in things that helps the company or the organization.
Yep.
I am willing to bet that if Kyle or Lynch, John Lynch, I think is the GM over there, or the owner or anyone had gone to Debo and said, listen, Debo, we know we are using you in a way that no other receiver is being used in the league. So we're going to take care of you.
Exactly.
We're going to make sure you're taken care of. I bet he wouldn't say a peep. He'd already be signed.
Exactly right, D.
Yep. He'd already be signed. So anyway, that's my response. Good one. Good one.
Yep.
LD.
All right. So, man, Andy, this has been incredible. We're at the next segment here to the show close, and that's where we share our learnings. So, D, do you want to share your learnings first, or shall I?
Would you do the honors initially, my brother?
I will do that. So this is going to bother our super producer, Jeff Shirley, but I have four because Jeff likes odd numbers, but I have four.
Oh, you're about to get, you're going to be edited, brother. Okay, switch. Brand nerds, he's saying four now. You're only going to hit three. Go ahead, Larry.
So company leaders out there, number one, company leaders out there, here's a challenge. Can you help infuse your company to be in service for its employees in your community, like Andy is doing? I believe that if we can actually start with what Andy's done and make this something that becomes worldwide, the world will be a much better place. So that's number one. Number two, if you're looking for a job and you're really good at what you do, another challenge, can you find a company that shares your core values? In other words, do you know your core values and do they align with where you're going to work? Mm-hmm. So really, I say that too, having just finished the Hulu show on Theranos, which if you work this is the antithesis of that, right? So third, getting what Andy talked about, starting with, if you're a startup, getting the first customer is so difficult. And then it's right there in difficulty behind it. Then to the second, third, and fourth is so hard. So understanding that when you go in is critical and really critical for success to make sure you have that view of the world as you're getting started. And then the fourth one, I love Andy's story about his restaurant and bar. What really I get out of that is it's really important to have humility
and understanding where you are in terms of your experience when you're embarking upon something new. That experience really does matter. So those are my four things.
Thank you for those three things, Larry.
We'll see which one Jeff wants to cut.
I know. Actually, we communicate, Andy, the time, how things are going in terms of time. So when Larry said he had four, Jeff sends the very angry emoji with the red. he's very upset, but he'll be okay. He'll be okay. Those are great, Larry. I've got some overlap to you. So Andy, you've heard, I know, at least one podcast. So, you know, I will sometimes, it will come upon me that this individual that I happen to be on a podcast with, along with Larry and Jeff and Jade and others, is more than the accomplishments that have been read at the top of the podcast. They are human beings and they have some special gifts that they can give to the world that only Andy, they can give to the world. No one else can give these gifts to the world but them. And so sometimes I'm able to connect into that. And so I'm going to make an attempt to do that with you today. So I've got three things because that's what the producer says we got to have. And then I'm going to be fancy, Larry, and a bonus. I'm not going to call it.
Okay.
And a bonus. Okay. The first one is digestible values. Here's what I mean by that. Andy, you not only are about values, you are about presenting those values in a fashion that others can digest. So fabric, fun, authentic, bold, respectful. Is it innovative? Is that the
innovative
and then collaboration or collaborative? Mm-hmm. All right. Correct. So these are things that people, they can remember fabric and then they can remember the acrostic and what each of them mean. So brand nerds, take this from Andy. If you have some values, make them digestible. Second is supreme trust, not just trust, supreme trust. You supremely trust your team.
Yeah.
You supremely trust them. You trust them so much that you do not feel the need to give them a script of say this, do this in order to make the employee, to make the customers happy. You supremely trust them to do that. And you have sort of a trifecta of this trust triangle. You reference Simon Sinek, trusting relationship of the customer. So you trust them to do the right thing by the customer, trusting relationship amongst the peers. So their employees, they trust one another. But then there's another trust that you did not speak to, but is implied. They trust themselves to perform. Yep. They trust themselves to meet the high bar. So supreme trust, that's second. And third is kindness in service. You don't create a vacation fund unless you are kind in the service you're wanting to provide your team. You don't raise the percentage that you all are paying in medical coverage for your team from 90 to 100 unless there's a kindness about what you want to do in service. Listening to your brothers and the way you talk about them, there's a kindness that I sense that you have. So when I bring together the digestible values and the way you have crafted that here and I'm certain other ways, and the supreme trust that you have in your team, not just now, but even before now, and the kindness and service, I am now reminded of your father with his unfortunate passing when you were seven. Seven's a very special number. Seven's a special number. You said that he was a journalist, and you have said this word maybe more than of any other word today. Second has to be trust. Third is values, but the word you said most often is story.
Mm.
Story. I like that story. I want to tell a story about that. This is storytelling. story continued to come up. This is from your father, okay? Your father was a journalist. He told stories. You are his son, so you tell stories. So now let me bring all of this home. Let me bring all this home. Here is the reason why I think you were able to walk through on a hike and go, shareholder supremacy, there's a conflict here. Employee supremacy. How were you able to do that? You were able to decipher what's missing in shareholder supremacy. You have been able to decipher what's been missing for employees. You have been able to decipher in the very companies that you have purchased what's missing. I know it's basic technology with iPad. Decipher what's been missing. It's why you would ask the question, does this work? Because you are attempting to decipher. So what I believe is your gift is you are the Rosetta Stone of business. A Rosetta Stone was created to decipher hieroglyphics. And what you are, Andy, is you are an actual Rosetta Stone living and breathing. We can put you in an area and you can decipher what's going on. You can decipher what's missing. You can decipher what's needed. And then once you've made that determination, you can then feel the need. And I believe that is your gift to the world, brother. You're a Rosetta Stone, a living, breathing Rosetta Stone.
Wow, you just blew me away. Thank you. Yeah. That really like went right to my heart. Man, thank you.
You're welcome, brother.
Dee has a way of putting this together that's really special. And everything he says, though, is dead on. It really is.
Yep.
That connection to stories, like I've never heard that. I've been on this planet for however many years and never made that connection of how important stories are to me and the fact that my dad was a journalist. That's like, wow, that's an amazing insight. Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, so Andy, anything that you want to share? Any learnings or anything that you want to posit that we discussed today that you'd like to talk to the brand owners about?
The only thing I just say about, and I know I've talked a lot about this employee supremacy. So I bought this company in 2015, so 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. We have only had one person leave the company since I started this company. One person leave the company voluntarily. We have had to exit some employees. You have to do that as an entrepreneur. Yeah. If you don't have good cultural fit, only one employee has actually left the company voluntarily. And I just wanted to bring that up because imagine I have people from 7 years ago who have been with this company who, when they're talking to their customer, they're not saying, I just learned about this and I'm trying to figure out how to tell you about it. They know all the way back to 7 years. So anyhow, that's another one of my, I guess, proud achievements and how much of an impact that can have.
Wow.
And that's a great way to segue to the end, Dee, because you think about, does anything speak better to results than that? The continuity of that, the best teams have continuity and that translates into real results. How many employees do you have, Andy?
We're at 20.
Okay, that's amazing.
So a small team.
Wow, what a great show. We're so thrilled to have had you, Andy. We're going to go to the show close. Brand Nerds, thanks for listening to Brands, Beats, and Bites, recorded virtually on Zoom at a production of KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM radio and worldwide at kzsu.org. The executive producers are Jeff Shirley, Daryl D.C. Cobbin, myself, Larry Taman, Haley Cobbin, Jade Kate, and Tom Dioro.
The Podfather.
Yes, sir. And if you are listening to us via podcast, it would be great if you can please rate and review us. Additionally, if you do like the show, please subscribe and share. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we look forward to next time where we will have more insightful and enlightening talk about marketing with another great business leader as our guest.
If you wish to contact us, our email is brandsbeatsbytes@kzsu.stanford.edu. Again, that is brands, B-R-A-N-D-S, beats, B-E-A-T-S, Bytes, B-Y as in yellow, T-E-S at KZSU.stanford.edu.